It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Health insurance companies deny millions of claims each year. A new investigation by ProPublica and Capital Forum found insurance giant Cigna used automation to deny claims en masse. Call in about medically necessary treatment. Your stories about claims, welcome. Bring your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Patrick Rucker is a contributor to ProPublica and senior reporter at the investigative outlet The Capital Forum, co-author of this investigation into the billing practices of Cigna. Patrick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. You and your team pored over these internal documents, spoke with former Cigna company executives, and you found the company saved millions of dollars each year by denying claims. How did Cigna do this?
Well, the insurance companies have a lot of room to deny claims that they decide, despite your doctor deeming something as medically necessary, the insurer can step in front of that decision and say, we decide that this is not medically necessary. And they understood that they have a right to do that. And there's an argument that that does prevent some abuses or too much over diagnosing or over treating patients. But in this case, the Cigna employees would deem something not medically necessary with a flick of the wrist. Just in less than 2 seconds, they would stamp something as not medically necessary. So he carried the judgment of a doctor that said this thing was not needed on medical grounds, but they made that decision in, again, less than 2 seconds without even opening a patient's file.
Can you explain this automated process and the steps that happens? You know, you go to the doctor, there's a diagnosis, a code, and then what?
It matches the doctor will fill out, you know, Patrick's got a cough, Patrick has bone pain in this case that we highlight in the story. And the doctor will say, okay, well, what could this be? And it'll fill out a form that says, I diagnose certain things. And that insurance company takes those, you know, numbers and decides, okay, is that a reasonable, first off, is it covered at all? Like certain cosmetic surgeries, it's just not covered. Immune treatments, vaccines, that's almost undoubtedly covered automatically. It doesn't need to be reviewed. But then there's this whole batch in the middle of something that might be covered in the case of being deemed medically necessary, and the insurance company has to agree with the doctor. That is a normal process. That's an understood process. That's a an operation that runs routinely, millions of times a day, likely, across the industry. And it has to be done quickly because there's a lot of patients. But what was, in this case, we're talking about a band of claims that were a few hundred bucks, and that for a very long time, Cigna, and I should say United Healthcare is another one that we acknowledge that this they have a system like this. We believe there's others. But they all decided, boy, these few hundred dollar claims are kind of driving us crazy because we're approving them automatically because it just costs too much money to run them through the review system. An ordinary review system would be a nurse will look at it, you know, maybe computer technicians have to handle it, enter it into the system. Eventually a medical director will look at it, open the patient's file, scour the details. That all costs a few hundred bucks. So at a certain point, it was just cheaper for Cigna and other operators to just write a check, be done with it, and pay the claim. But the innovation came, if you can put it that way, on the corporate side, when they said, guys, we can affordably deny these claims, we just have to rewire the review system. Rather than going through the whole length of an intake, nurse review, finally a medical director sits on his desk and opens it and reviews it carefully, we'll just rewire it, land it right on the medical director's desk. I should say a medical director is just a industry jargon for a doctor who works for the insurer. We'll land this claim on the medical director's desk and they'll just sign off on it without even looking at it. And in the view of the lawyers of the insurance companies, that was satisfactory under the law.
talking about rejected health insurance claims. Patrick Rucker with us, senior reporter for the Capital Forum. You can join in with your questions, your comments about medical claims, 800-642-1234. Patrick, you looked at this specific band of claims or procedures. What types of procedures got routinely denied? Are there any examples?
We point to two examples in the story, and I can mention a couple more here. But vitamin D test, vitamin D, of course, is a nutrient that we need to live, and blood tests can determine if you have a lack of that nutrient. There's something called an autonomic nervous system test, which is a mouthful, but it's essentially if you believe, or the doctor believes you've got a autoimmune disease or maybe diabetes or certain conditions that affect your balance and your ability to respond to sweat normally, to, you know, not have your equilibrium and so on. That's a test that was run through the same system. There's something called for older patients who might be bedridden, there is a treatment or a product, a pressure reducing mattress, so that those older patients who are on their back for a lot of the day don't develop bed sores. That is something that's often covered, but sometimes it's not. And rather than giving those claims a thorough review, as I think the patients expected, that would be run through this automatic denial system as well. So there's a handful, but we're looking at, again, claims that typically cost a few $100 that the industry determined the patient might grimace and not be very happy, but will ultimately just pay it and not fight to the end.
Some state regulators are questioning if Cigna's review process is legal. Is it illegal to deny coverage without reviewing cases first?
Well, these companies clearly thought that they were on the right side of the line on this. And the way it was explained to us, medical directors, again, these insurance paid doctors, have to be the ones that deny claims. That's a commonly understood principle of their review system. That if a doctor, your doctor, says Patrick needs this treatment, and the insurance company wants to say, nah, he doesn't need that treatment, or we're not going to pay for that, that at the very least, it should be a doctor who works for the insurance company who says that. So that at least ideally, you've got two medical peers who are debating the worth and the importance of this procedure. That's a bedrock principle of the entire review system, that only a doctor, only a medical director can deny a claim or say no to treatment. So the insurance company said, well, how much time do these medical directors really need to spend on looking at these claims for us to be compliant with the law? And their conclusion was less than 2 seconds, that they don't need to open it, look at it, review the patient files in any way at all. We'll just stack them up on the medical director's desk. They'll sign off. This is all electronically, but they'll put on an automatic signature and move on to the next pile.
Let's take a call now. Chris in Rhinelander. Chris, what's coming up for you?
Just a question on how insurance companies can get away with not paying for one part of a procedure and therefore the procedure isn't done, or not paying for labs that are needed to diagnose whether or not a patient needs to be have a procedure or some other activity. For example, if they're getting a spinal injection of a steroid, the insurance company won't pay for the dye, which is needed to pinpoint where the injection is going. And then a second part of the question is, how is it that insurance companies are getting away with paying their executive officers these bloated $100 million bonuses annually? Because those are all unpaid claims when these guys are getting paid just under $1 million a year in a salary. Thank you.
Chris, thank you. Patrick, go ahead.
Well, I think to put it one way, that they get away with what they get away with because people tolerate it, or the insurance commissioners at different states have not found a way to put limits on this. The insurance industry is mostly regulated at the state level. Wisconsin's Commissioner of Insurance has a lot of say on how these companies operate. And the same goes for other states. So it's a very thorny or a real thicket of different rules and standards that we mentioned just a second ago, the dye that accompanies the scan. We've heard that many times. I think a lot of listeners would be like, what are you telling me? How could you do the scan if you don't have the dye? Mm. Well, they do pull those two things out as being separate claims or requests for care. So it's not maybe a satisfying answer, but it's essentially what people will tolerate. And the insurance industry responds to how many complaints, how much their regulator is giving, scrutinizing their the way they operate. It's really up to the public and the regulators to highlight the things that they're not happy with.
Capital Forum journalist Patrick Rucker here, co-author of a ProPublica investigation looking at why health insurance claims get denied and the practices of the healthcare company Cigna specifically. Call in with your questions about claim denials, how the appeal process works, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new ProPublica and Capital Forum probe finds health insurers reject about 1 in 7 claims for treatment. Call in with your questions, your experiences fighting with insurance companies over claim denials. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Patrick Rucker is a ProPublica contributor, senior reporter for the investigative outlet, The Capital Forum. Patrick, how has Cigna responded to this investigation?
We talked to them for quite a few months, asked a lot of detailed questions, trying to understand the process. They didn't really engage. We had a lot of detailed questions. We didn't get very detailed responses. A couple of their responses are in the story. They sort of brushed it aside. Since then, some other reporters have asked, Cigna's, they don't deny that this system exists. And frankly, they didn't do very much to explain, defend it, except to say that it is fast, it is efficient. And in the overall universe of the healthcare system, they would consider this part of efficient operating of reviews and denials. I think for us and for a lot of the readers, the question isn't, can this process, the fundamental issue with this process is it above board? Is it on the level with the patient? Because the patient is never told when they get this letter, which says, signed by a medical director, it says, we deem this not medically necessary. I think any reasonable person would say, well, they must have given it some kind of consideration, a meaningful look. But in fact, it just was run through this auto-denying system. That's the part that is not open and not something that Cigna wanted to discuss with us.
Let's bring in Walter calling from St. Louis, Missouri. Walter, what's on your mind?
I was wondering why these medical directors can't be held responsible. It seems to me it would be medical malpractice to be issuing decisions just based on a two-second flip of the page.
Walter, thank you. Interesting. Patrick?
Even apart from this story, the work of medical directors and insurance companies, frankly, in general, has been pretty well protected legally by the idea that, hey, when we told Patrick he couldn't get the vitamin D test, we didn't say he couldn't go get it somewhere else or have someone else pay for it. We just said we weren't going to pay for it. And that has been offered the insurance companies a lot of room to brush aside any questions about their judgment, because they say, you might not like our decision, but we never said you couldn't get the care through somebody else. And I think some listeners might be rolling their eyes at that reasoning, but that's held up pretty well for them.
Cigna also responded saying that a denial shouldn't result in additional out-of-pocket costs for patients using in-network providers. Is that, would that be true?
That's a little tricky. Put it this way. Certainly, if you're out of network, you are going to be more vulnerable to having this bill land in your lap. I think I can certainly, that part is true.
Let's bring in Lori in Madison now. Lori, what's your story?
Yes, when my daughter was in the hospital about 5 years ago as a teenager, they eventually diagnosed that she had an ulcer. And then the insurance company denied as not medically necessary the endoscopy that diagnosed the ulcer. And I feel like this is an incredibly unjust system because it penalizes the people who are either too sick to push back or not well-informed enough, too uneducated, don't know that they can push back against this thing.
Lori, thank you so much for sharing your story. Patrick, what do you see of the impact here?
This affects a lot of people. And I think, you know, some of us might say cancer treatments cost thousands of dollars, tens of thousands. Maybe other long-term chronic health issues cost a lot of money and can be crippling financially for families. But a few $100 is not nothing, especially for people who need to make a car payment or put food on the table. So even though this is just a few $100, in the insurance industry has determined that this is a bill that a lot of customers will just swallow hard and pay. I don't think we should presume that this is not a hardship for people to have to pay a few $100 on a test or a treatment that they thought was covered.
Patrick Recker here, senior reporter for the Capital Forum, discussing rejected health insurance claims and their recent investigation. I want to turn to a story detailing the plight of this chronically ill college student, Christopher McNaughton, his ulcerative colitis drugs denied by his health insurance company, United Healthcare. Can you tell us what you found with McNaughton's case?
That was a terrific example of just what kind of an ordeal a patient can go through with a long battle with an insurance company. Christopher has a very serious chronic health condition, as you just said. It's led to crippling health ailments, weakness, diarrhea, persistent. I mean, just could not function or eat, have a normal diet, couldn't have been a young man who was thriving, was on a basketball team in college, and that was all ended when this onset of this disease. And treating it is expensive. It costs, hundreds of thousands of dollars, certainly over the course of his life, to give him these drug treatments that he needed. But for McNaughton, it was not he didn't find this to be a open or a fair system where he could say, here's what my doctor says I need, can I have it? The insurance company, in that case, it was United Health, put Christopher through many layers of reviews where, unlike his doctor's view that this was medically necessary, they again and again found that it was not, despite the fact that Christopher's doctor was one of the most well-renowned gastroenterologists in the world.
Could regulators or other forms of medical oversight step up here, step up enforcement of existing rules?
I think it just takes public pressure to draw attention to these kinds of problems, and the person to call is your insurance commissioner.
So, what is the future of these types of automated systems, AI in assessing claims? Where does it go from here?
I don't know if the insurance industry is ever going to stop trying to reduce costs and process these claims as quickly as possible. So I think that battle is going to go on indefinitely. The question is, are the regulators and the public going to scrutinize and put enough pressure on these doctors to say, look, if you're going to make a medical decision, a very complex case lands on your desk, are you going to give it the attention it needs, or are you going to just give the perfunctory review and often a denial?
Where do you go next with this reporting?
We're talking to more. We're looking for insiders, frankly, at the insurance industry, people who saw and heard things that didn't sit with them, and we're continuing to look at what are the standards of reviewing care, how are these claims reviewed and then denied, and just asking, is that a fair system?
Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Patrick Rucker is a contributor to ProPublica, senior reporter at the Capital Forum. We have a link to their series called Uncovered, How the Insurance Industry Denies Coverage to Patients. It's at WPR.org/mornings. And still ahead, a legal advocate has tips on how to handle denied claims. Call in with your questions, your thoughts on claims, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get tips now for handling insurance claim denials and what to know about the appeals process. Call in with questions about your disputed claims, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sachin Gupte is an attorney and clinical assistant professor at UW Law School's Center for Patient Partnerships. Sachin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good morning. Let's start from the beginning. What is the first thing a patient should do after their claim is denied?
Read the denial and be clear about the reason why a claim was denied. There's usually three reasons that we see. One is that it's simply not a covered benefit. A second reason that we see is that it's not medically necessary. And the third reason that we typically see is that the procedure is experimental or investigational.
So basically, the first thing to do is reach out and make sure you understand what the denial is in the first place?
Correct.
And so after that step, you have clarity. The claim is still denied. What do you do next?
So, you're going to want to look at your actual insurance policy, and that can be sometimes a little tricky to actually get a hold of. Some insurance companies make it very accessible. It might be on an online portal, but other times that you kind of get the runaround in seeing what the actual policy is. They'll send you a summary of benefits sometimes, which is a short 5 to 10 page pamphlet that kind of outlines it. But what you really want to look at is the contract. And so those are usually anywhere from like 80 to 100 pages, and that's just all words, and it kind of lays out what is covered, when it's covered, the criteria, and that's really what we're looking to enforce when we do insurance denials, and included in that policy is deadlines, and so those are going to be incredibly important in terms of how much time do you have to dispute that claim.
What is the time frame? What is typical for how long you have?
So it's going to depend a little bit on what type of insurance you have. So if you have public insurance, Medicaid rules are going to be a little bit different. Medicare rules are going to be a little bit different. But if you have fully insured insurance, typically that's going to be at least 60 days. Usually they give you up to 180, but it's going to be at least 60. Medicaid gives you 45 days to dispute a claim, and I believe Medicare is going to be 120 days.
Where will be the sticking points in that time frame? What will take longer?
The longest thing is sometimes just getting all the documents that you need to be able to answer to the reason of the denial. So one of the things that is incredibly important is the relationship that you have with your provider, especially if the reason the insurance company is saying that it's not going to be covered is that it's not medically necessary. Your best advocate a lot of times is going to be your provider, and they can either write a letter of support, they can even reach out, talk to the medical director at the insurance company and kind of streamline that process. But getting all those things in order is sometimes the most time consuming part of insurance appeals.
And what is the most effective way to communicate with that primary care physician and insurance companies during this appeal process?
you can use my chart to initiate and kind of talk to your provider about like, hey, this is the response that I've got. Usually they're already clued in. Some providers are very proactive and they can do a peer-to-peer review with the insurance company. Some providers are unfamiliar with that process, but you can talk to their staff, kind of understand their reasoning. And so that's something that our clinic does quite a bit of. We'll have our clients sign releases. We'll talk to the provider and their staff about like, okay, why are they recommending this particular treatment? Standard of treatment says this, why is this not applicable? And we put that into a letter form and submit it for our clients.
So these peer-to-peer conversations are between a patient's provider and their medical insurance company. How can patients ensure that that process goes as smoothly as possible?
So that's a lot on, to be honest with you, that's going to be a lot on the provider itself. And the patient's not going to be included in that conversation. And so understanding the urgency is something that the patient will have to have that conversation with the provider about like, hey, like there is a timeline here that I'm trying to follow for various reasons, whether it's medical or life, and being like, I only have 3-month window to get this procedure done. I really need this done. Can you get on the phone with the medical director? And so you are a bit reliant on your provider and for the peer-to-peer review, excuse me.
Do you have any tips on the best ways to document each interaction, each thing that happens in the appeal process for, you know, as a patient?
Yeah, the first thing that I recommend doing is just putting together a timeline, both of who you spoke to, when you spoke to them, names, both on the clinic side and also on the insurance side. Even if it's informal communications, I think one thing that is always effective is if you can make an argument that as a patient, you did your due diligence and you did all the things that the insurance company asked of you. And if somebody on the insurance side said, gave you the thumbs up and said like, yep, everything's good to go. While that's not gonna necessarily be conclusive, it really helps to make an effective argument of like, hey, like we relied on this information. It's in the contract that should be covered. We spoke to so-and-so on this date at this time and they said everything looks good. So why am I being stuck with this bill now?
Talking about rejected health insurance claims, the anatomy of an appeal, if you will. Sachin Gupte here, UW-Madison Law School professor. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Norman in De Pere is here. Norman, hi, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm a retired medical director, family physician. So I had personally denied many claims and reviewed them over time. And thought we had a very fair appeal process. We would send it out for external review by physicians of the appropriate specialist. But several years ago, I found myself on the other end of a denial of an MRI that was used for diagnosis of my prostate cancer. I went through 3 levels of appeal, including a administrative law judge. And the final result was that you make some very excellent points on why it should be covered, but it's still denied because that was the Medicare policy. So, but on the other side, there are many claims that are unnecessary and are appropriately denied. And I still had the MRI. I just had to pay for it out of pocket. So
what does it make you think about the system, and where do you see solutions?
Well, what really troubled me is I tried to speak to the medical director of the insurance company and basically refused to accept my calls, which was, I, as a medical director previously, I had always, if a physician would call, would at least discuss the case with them. They didn't agree with the decisions necessarily, but at least it helped to get additional information. But I still think it's a worthwhile system, and I just would say if you feel strongly about a denied claim, follow through the appeals process.
Norman, really appreciate you bringing your story illuminating here. Sachin, go ahead.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what Norman just said. a lot of insurance appeals is about perseverance. The first level of appeal is going to be at the internal level. And understandably, you don't see the most success at that level because insurance companies are kind of overseeing themselves and policing themselves in terms of the denial of the claim. We often see the most success at the external level where we have a more objective review process, but it takes time and diligence to get there because there will be sometimes multiple levels of internal appeals that you have to exhaust before you can get to that external review.
I wonder what types of cases typically do you and your students take on at your Center for Patient Partnerships? What do you look for?
So we kind of see everything across the spectrum. Sometimes it's going out of network to get a second opinion because there's a certain specialist that has an expertise that you're looking to see. Sometimes it's when somebody hasn't responded to standard treatment for cancer and the doctor wants to prescribe something that might be considered experimental, but there's valid reason, medical reasons why they think it'll be successful. Sometimes it's after the fact that treatment's already been given and everything went great, but for whatever reason, I think you kind of touched upon this in the previous segment, is that maybe the codes just don't add up and the insurance company just flat out denies it and patients kind of just stuck questioning kind of why is this on my lap now?
How successful is your center, in closing these cases successfully for the patient?
I can say that we've had quite a bit of success. There's never a guarantee, but one of the things I think that makes us successful is the students are able to kind of pay attention to the details that when you're sick and you have a lot on your shoulders, you may not have the time and patience to go through that process.
Let's go to Kenneth now in Stoughton. Kenneth, hi.
Hello. I would like to question the likelihood of actually being able to reach someone to resolve a problem. My wife and I are both old enough to be on Medicare. We're in our 70s. She had an x-ray done and read that she had breast cancer and lumpectomy. So as part of that follow-up, there were an x-ray taken, and for whatever reason, it was done by a company or a service in Madison, Wisconsin. We got a notice that was being turned over for bill collection for not being paid, and the tracking it down, it turned out that they have it read by another company or association of some sort, and the billing came out of a company out of Texas. And so we could never, ever get a hold of anybody to talk to who could resolve it. They just kept saying it's been turned over to collections. It was just impossible to reach a real person.
Kenneth, thank you. Just really understanding this maze and communication not being able to get through. Can this story something that you hear, Sachin?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is something that we hear pretty common. One thing that hospitals traditionally have done is sell their unpaid bills to collection agencies. More recently, sometimes they hire collection agencies to do the collection on their behalf, which can be a little bit tricky because you don't know who you actually owe money to. And so that's something that we try and disentangle for a lot of our clients.
How should patients respond if the hospitals or the insurers have sent, threatening letters or a patient's unpaid medical bills to debt collectors?
The first thing that I recommend is responding to that debt collector. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is very effective in terms of understanding the status of somebody's debt. And so you can ask the debt collector to validate or authenticate the debt. And that basically is asking them to prove that they actually are the owners of that debt. And if they're not able to show that, that kind of tips their hand that if they were to file in court, that they probably don't have any evidence to show that they are actually entitled to collect money from you.
Attorney Sachin Gupte is Legal Advocacy Coordinator at the UW Center for Patient Partnerships. Call in with questions, your tips on where to start if insurance has denied your medical claim, your story in the appeals process, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show and the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Millions of medical claims are denied each year. We learn the best defense for how to navigate an appeal and communicate with a health insurance company and your doctor. Call in with questions. Call in with your stories, your lessons learned in these appeals. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Attorney Sachin Gupte works on providing health and legal advocacy in the Center for Patient Partnerships at UW-Madison. Stays with us. Sachin, we heard from Diane in Waterloo, called and said that they have been dealing with insurance companies for 24 years now because of their child. And Diane learned over the years that if a person is in a drug trial, regardless if it is out of network or out of state, insurance companies must cover it. Diane says it is Wisconsin law. And I'm wondering, can you speak to protections like these?
Yeah, they're going to be kind of very specific to what the trial is about, but we have had some cases where our clients were enrolled in clinical trials, but then still got stuck with a bill. And so there are protections in place. And I think you have to be very clear with kind of the clinic coordinator on the trial side to be to have some clarity in terms of what's going to be covered by the trial itself. And then what can be billed towards insurance if things are considered standard treatment or standard of care, and I'm talking about labs that would be run anyway, insurance companies would be required to cover that. And then whatever the trial drug is would also be covered by the investigation side.
So certainly paying attention to the contract in the trial itself, and then making sure that there's clarity with the insurance company as well, because you need to know what matches up with what your insurance is covering.
Correct.
And there are two different types of health insurance appeals, internal and external appeals. Can you tell us what sets the two apart?
Yeah, it is going to be who is actually doing the review. So when we talk about an internal review, it is the insurance company themselves who are reviewing the claim and the denial. And their process is usually made up of their own employees. They don't necessarily have any expertise in on the medical side, which can be good or bad, but it could be somebody who is in their HR department, in their accounting department, and they kind of come together as a committee and review the denied claim. And we can submit things beforehand to articulate why we think something should be covered from a medical standpoint.
Typically, with these medical directors inside insurance companies looking at case by case, what type of physicians are they?
They can be across the board. I think family medicine is the one specialty that we see most often because they deal with the most variety. And so that is the most common specialist that we've come across.
How does someone know which type of appeal is right for their situation, or understanding who is looking at the appeal?
Yeah, that can be incredibly confusing in terms of where you are in the process or where you should appeal. That goes back to that original contract. And so when I was talking earlier about the insurance policy, that is the 80 to 100 page contract that will outline kind of what your appeal rights are, how you submit it, when you can submit it. And that should also be included in the denial letter that patients receive. And so whether that's in the mail or electronic, it should outline what an individual's appeal rights are.
Paul from La Crosse wants to know, if insurance companies are denying claims like this, is it better for people to forego insurance, hope they don't get sick, and pay for medical bills out of pocket?
That will get very expensive. The bills don't go away. And so if you're able to pay out of pocket, like, that is an option. But I think the average person, those bills would rack up pretty quickly, especially when you get sick. And so I do encourage people to push back on insurance companies and go through the appeal process.
Okay. Let's go to Gary now in La Crosse. Gary, what is your story?
I had my insurance go up in February, so I called to make sure I paid the proper amount and talked to their customer service. They quoted me an amount. I paid it, but they underquoted me, so they canceled my insurance. And then I called again in March to straighten it out, and they wouldn't let me pay the difference, and they canceled my insurance, and now I've lost all my coverage and my medication coverage, and it'll take 6 to 8 weeks to straighten it out.
Sachin, do you have any tips or suggestions with Gary's story here?
Yeah, that's incredibly frustrating. I would recommend starting with, if you have notes in terms of who you spoke to when you got the quote, what they sent you, and if you feel like you paid in full, ultimately that is a review that could be seen by the Officer of Commissioner Insurance. And if they felt, and if they, upon the review, feel like, no, this is a valid contract and you upheld your side of it, your coverage could be reinstated. That obviously doesn't help in the interim when you don't have medication, but that is one option to pursue.
Gary, I know this is extremely personal, but to ask you, if your medications aren't covered right now, how much are you forking over to continue on them?
As they offered to let me pay for my insurance and fill out a form to get reimbursed if and when it gets settled. You know, they've admitted their guilt, like I said, but the time frame it's going to take to get it to go through, I mean, the insurance, the medications are in the thousands a month.
Wow. Sachin, you know, such a predicament here. This is must be very distressing.
Yeah, the other thing that I would consider is reaching out to the manufacturer of some of these drugs. We've had some success as a center in the past reaching out directly and explaining the situations and the need, and they oftentimes are willing or have programs to help people pay for drugs when they're too expensive, or in situations like this where they know they will be getting paid eventually. That sometimes is an option to alleviate the short-term burden.
What Wisconsin organizations can help with the medical appeals process?
So in addition to us at the Center for Patient Partnerships, there is Legal Action can take on some Medicaid cases, I believe. There's also Disability Rights. They, I think, specialize more on the Medicare side of things. There's also, in terms of getting connected, I don't think they do as much with appeals, but Covering Wisconsin is a great resource in terms of getting connected to care.
If a patient is eligible for medical debt forgiveness, should they take that option and forego appeals?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Well, if they are eligible for medical debt forgiveness and they're in the throes of different appeals, what option should they take? What road would you suggest?
Yeah, I would say if a hospital is offering to write off a bill, and a lot of them will have something that they refer to as charity care, if people are eligible, if they're low income, or if they fall under a certain grant, if a hospital is willing to kind of waive the bill, then I would absolutely jump on that opportunity.
Sachin, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sachin Gupte is an attorney and clinical assistant professor at UW Law School's Center for Patient Partnerships. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Thank you.